Movie Squad is sponsored by Luna Palace Cinemas, WA's premier independent cinemas, bringing the best film content and cinematic events to Perth. Come and enjoy the Luna Palace experience.
Toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. The most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Welcome to the Movie Squad podcast. My name is Tristan Fidler.
And my name is Laura Blundell.
And this is a podcast version of your weekly edition of Movie Chat, broadcasting on RTRFM 92.1 Friday mornings, 7:30 a.m. with breakfast host Pam Boland. And this is a fun episode because, well, just to be a big spoiler, these are two films that I really liked. But we talk about one that's been out on release for some time in the streaming world, and that's a Netflix original movie called Rebel Ridge, directed by Jeremy Saulnier, who directed Green Room, a film I really love, and also starring Aaron Pierre. So we talk about that one later in the show. But to kick things off, we have a real, I was going to say sledgehammer. That's the word that keeps coming to mind. But it's a real, it really makes an impact on a viewer, this film that you're going to talk about, Laura.
Yeah, so I'm talking about The Substance, which is from French director Coralie Farget. It's her second film after 2017's Revenge, which we both also really liked. And we talk about that a little bit as well. And it's kind of like a demi-essence? What are they calling it?
I haven't. Yeah, that's because yeah.
I saw it on a magazine cover somewhere. but yeah, it's been touted as Demi Moore's greatest performance, and I mean, it's so up my alley that I definitely agree with that.
Mm. And we're going to hear a little bit from the trailer right now to get you in the mood for talking about The Substance.
Have you ever dreamt of a better version of yourself? Younger, more beautiful, more perfect. One single injection unlocks your DNA and will release another version of yourself. This is The Substance.
I'm Sue. 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 Sue.
You're hired.
Let's go.
Every Friday here on Brekkie, we do take some time out for the cinematic arts. We look into the brains of the blockbuster babes, Tristan Fidler and Laura Blundell. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
That was very sensible. That was a very measured good morning from both of you.
Well, you know, sometimes talking about films is very serious.
Oh, sorry. It's so serious. I'm going to put my film bro hat on and then just be really, really, you know, really, really serious. I'll bring my voice octave. Anyway, Laura, we haven't caught up with you in a little while. How have you been?
Yeah, really good. I'm incredibly excited to chat about the movie I'm reviewing this morning.
Well, we don't need to do anything else, do we? We need to start talking about the movies. I don't want to hold off your excitement any longer.
Okay.
The excitement, I can feel it.
It's bubbling.
Talk to me a little bit about The Substance.
So The Substance is the second film from French writer, director, and in this co-editor, Coralie Farget, whose first film was back in 2017 and it was called Revenge. Tristan, did you see Revenge?
Yes, I did. I think it played as part of the French Film Festival, but I saw it not in a cinema, though I would have loved to have seen it. So I really enjoyed that film. It's a very, it's a revenge thriller. It's about a woman who is on holiday with her partner in this kind of desert retreat. There's some really unfortunate, awful stuff happens to her. She is chased down, left for dead, but she revives.
She gets it back.
She gets it back.
Mad Max style.
Mad Max style. So it's a revenge thrill, but it's very stylish, great synth soundtrack by Rob, and that's the name of the artist, Rob, that's not my familiarity with them. but it's also, like, very grisly and violent. I mean, the climax, not to spoil it,
anything involves like just blood being sprayed around the apartment. So
and then just literally running in circles trying to chase each other. It's great.
It is so wild, so hypnotic. So that was a film I was a fan of, and obviously you mentioning that, you've seen it as well. Yeah.
So that was her first film, a bit of a break between them. The Substance has won Best Screenplay at Cannes, and it's kind of, if Revenge was about a woman kind of externalising her rage at what society's put on her, The Substance is very much the flip side of that. So it stars Demi Moore as Elizabeth Sparkle.
Elizabeth
great name.
Sparkle?
Amazing name.
What in the world? What in the calisthenics is that?
That's interesting you say that. It does very much kind of hint at the tone of the film. But so she's Elizabeth Sparkle. She's a former Oscar winner who's kind of aged into a twilight career of aerobics TV show, Jane Fonda style.
Oh, I didn't even... Whoops.
Yeah, no, and she's successful. People watch it. It's like network television. But unfortunately, she has just turned 50, and her boss, who's appropriately named Harvey, played by a truly disgusting Dennis Quaid, but in great suits.
What is it about Harveys? Sorry to all the Harveys of the world.
My friend's son's named Harvey, so he's a good Harvey.
Yeah, he's doing the work
to him.
Recover the Harvey name.
So yes, Harvey unceremoniously forces her into retirement while shoveling prawns into his open trap.
What?
And it's filmed in a way that you just, if you already didn't like prawns, then you're definitely going to hate them now. I thought it was quite appetizing.
This is such a strange sidebar.
I'm sorry, yeah. But it's that the whole film is full of stuff like that. I'll get back on track.
Okay, no.
She's been fired or put out to pasture, essentially.
Yeah.
So she does what a lot of us do when we're feeling a little bit old, perhaps. She buys a dubious kind of at-home cosmetical procedure, and that is known as The Substance.
Do we all do that?
I've definitely done that, and you can look at my
Do you mean like
history.
A face,
like
just a like face
skincare
mask or something?
Things
oh,
that
right.
Probably don't
I was
do
thinking
what they say.
Like, I was thinking you meant like a dubious, like at-home Botox situation.
Well, it is kind of like that. So she buys this thing. She picks it up in this very, very sketchy, abandoned warehouse that's where her PO box is. Brings it home. I kind of don't want to spoil the procedure that she goes through because that's half the fun.
Okay.
But essentially, this substance has promised to unlock her DNA and unleash a younger, better, more beautiful, more perfect version of herself, which is exactly what she's after the firing, essentially.
Oh, spoiler for everyone. You can't unlock your DNA.
No.
It's not locked.
That's the beautiful, like, it's such a joke, but it's again, consistent with the tone. You may as well put that on the box. Like,
I feel like
whatever.
Maybe we're laughing too much about a movie that does seem quite scary.
It's not, though. It's really... I'm getting ahead of myself. It's very, very funny.
Oh, okay, good.
But, yeah, so she unlocks her DNA, essentially. So, essentially, it's said on the box, it reveals a better version of yourself.
Ooh.
This, unfortunately, is a literal interpretation.
Oh, no.
And so Elizabeth essentially gives birth to another version of herself, played by Margaret Qualley.
Oh, love her.
Yeah, they're both incredible. They've got great chemistry.
Margaret Qualley, famously in... Oh, now I'm forgetting everything I've ever seen Margaret Qualley in. Tristan?
I thought you were going to say famously married to Jack Antonoff.
Look, I was avoiding saying that.
We gave our congratulations long
yes,
ago on Movie
yeah,
Squad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't want to. She's not famous for being married to Jack Antonoff.
She's a great actor in shows like Maid, movies
Thank
like
you.
Stars at Noon.
Thank
but
you.
Also, Lana Del Rey did write a song about them, so that's pretty cool too.
I think that's very cool. It's very cool. Sorry for the sidebar, but
no,
I just could
cool
not
sidebars.
Remember.
She was also in Sanctuary. I think that was last year, and I thought she was really great in that, and that was a really fun film as well. I'll get back on track. She gives birth to Sue, which is this young, beautiful version of Elizabeth. But what we have to remember is they are one, so they are one connected entity. So the things that Elizabeth thinks about herself are manifested in Sue.
Oh,
so
no.
Sue is kind of doomed to repeat the mistakes that Elizabeth has made in her own life. And it's basically there's a lot of body horror, beautiful prosthetic kind of body horror, but it's basically about being at war with yourself as an insecure woman of a certain age, especially in an industry like the entertainment industry, where it's like very much an issue, or in this film it definitely is. And the director has said that it's about the violence we commit against ourselves. So where revenge was about kind of getting your own on external pressures, this is about internalising it and the kind of self-destruction that comes with that. It really resonated with me as well, because it's really silly and it's really over the top, and there is a lot of beautiful gore, but it's very, very funny. It's got this kind of surreal tone. Like, there's a point where all these horrible board members are looking at Margaret Qualley, and it's in the trailer, and Dennis Quaid says, "Pretty girls should always smile." And one of the board members does a hee-hee and, like, skips and walks down the thing, and it's creepy. Really strange. But it is played for laughs. But this film really let me see Demi Moore in a new light. It's definitely the most kind of dedicated, all-in I've seen her in anything.
Okay.
It's highly vulnerable. She's in a lot of scenes that a lot of people wouldn't like to be in, the way it's shot. The chemistry between her and Margaret Qualley was apparently built off the trust that they felt with each other in those scenes, both being quite vulnerable. She did sit in the makeup chair for 6 to 9 hours throughout the shoot because of the heaviness of the prosthetics. And both performances are incredible, but Demi Moore in particular is just carrying the weight of this character and everything that she kind of represents on her shoulders. There's one particular scene which has nothing to do with the horror, and it's not funny or anything, but it's kind of like in one of the quieter moments. Elizabeth's going on a date with like a regular dude, which is lovely, and it's like a little bit of hope for her because she's very isolated. The only person that she lives with is a giant portrait of herself from her kind of heyday in her very body double inspired apartment. So she's getting ready for this date. She looks incredible. She walks to the door and unfortunately sees a billboard of Sue out the front. And Sue is young and gorgeous, and she starts to feel her insecurities kind of rising up. So she goes back to the bathroom and puts more makeup on, and it looks a little bit strange. She goes back to try and leave the apartment and sees a distorted image of herself in the doorknob, which is nothing she can do about that. It's just a horrible angle. Goes back in, puts more makeup on. It's getting a bit much now. She puts a scarf on to kind of cover herself up. She's feeling insecure. And then she just looks at herself in the mirror with this horrible, very relatable disgust and completely wipes all of her makeup off, rips her false eyelashes off with, like, this hatred that you can feel. And it just reminded me, I've literally done that as a 14-year-old on a really bad skin day.
Yeah.
And I just think a lot of people are going to have that kind of relatability, and I think that's probably why it's resonating with a lot of people.
I've done that as a 28-year-old.
Yeah, we've all been in horrible, very low slumps like that.
Yeah.
And the director really understands that. And I just felt like a great sense of catharsis from this movie. Where it goes at the end, it's so heightened and ridiculous. It's kind of like not spoiling anything, but the vibe is like a Carrie kind of vibe.
Right, okay.
And you're just wanting to kind of cheer at the screen. And that's what I've heard a lot of people say, is that it kind of ends on this. The ending is like you're forced into self-acceptance.
Yeah, wow.
In front of societal disgust,
colour basically. Me curious.
I think you could do it.
Oh, I'm scared. But Tristan,
it's not scary. Like, there's some gore. There's definitely some gore and some violence.
I did love Lies Bleeding. That was gross.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. But it's really funny, and it's like, I just think it's really uplifting.
Tristan, you've also seen this movie.
Yes.
Anything to add?
Well, just to say, like, my partner Sally, shout out to Sally, is not a fan of horror films as well.
I feel like me and Sally are, like, destined to be, like, movie soulmates, because we do have a lot of the same. I think we like a lot of the same movies.
But she was very curious about The Substance, and even though, there are moments that are pretty, like full on, but she had a great time and really loved the film and thought Demi Moore, and you know, I agree, like Demi Moore like has always kind of been a presence, definitely in the 90s. She was, her body was a subject of focus in the ways in which films like Striptease or G.I. Jane, but also the way like that she was on magazine covers and kind of so there's a lot of kind of metatextual or intertextual references, but she's really great in this, and it really made me appreciate her in a way that I hadn't ever done before. And the filmmaking is so, yeah, it's sledgehammer. There's no subtlety, but it's so fun and it's so over the top, and it really lives up to the promise of a body horror film. Like, I think there's been a few recent films that have been like, oh, body horror, this will be like a satire in Hollywood. Shout out to Maxine. But, you know, Maxine, I think, pales in comparison to what this film pulls off. And I'm heartened as well, because I was such a fan of Revenge, and to see Coraline, the director, just go for it with this film is phenomenal. So I really enjoyed seeing it in the cinema as well.
Yeah,
and we were at the same screening with a very sizable crowd, and there were a lot of vocal reactions to what was going on. But it was all fun, I thought. Yeah.
Really interesting stuff, and definitely one that, look, I'm tempted by. I'm interested in.
Yes.
I think it could be something that captures my attention. I love Demi Moore, so it's definitely not outside of the realm of.
What's your, like, what do you love Demi Moore from, or do you have any...
I just like her sort of cultural presence, and I was always interested in, I don't know, I just found her quite engaging, like the way that she speaks whenever I watched interviews with her. I think off the top of my head I can remember her in, she's in Ghost, right?
Yes.
With Patrick Swayze. And I remember her being the mum in LOL, you know, that movie with Miley Cyrus.
I had the pleasure.
Yeah, I mean, don't worry about it. If you were there at the time, it made sense. Now it's just like a funny teen movie. But I don't know if it's necessarily her cinematic performances that have really struck me. I just really thought that she seemed quite grounded and quite an interesting character. So I love the idea that this meta sort of information is informing the choice for this, and kind of informing what you understand to be the struggle that this character is having too. I think that's a really cool move, and something that interests me about the movie a little bit more. Margaret Qualley, you know, I think she might be great in this as well, and a little bit of a great choice for comparison-wise for Demi Moore, because she is so young and so in the spotlight in such a similar way. Mm. Interesting. Yeah, yeah. I'm keen to catch this movie. Is it out in cinemas now?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I believe.
It's out in cinemas this week, and it's definitely, like, it is body horror. There's so many influences from David Cronenberg to Reanimator. So it really goes for it, and it's great to see, like, old-school special effects with some of the prosthetics.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're down for the ride, I think you'll have a great time.
Yeah, you got to submit to it, but it's worth it.
All right, we'll catch up with more Blockbuster Babe goodness in just a tick. It's 7:45. You're tuned into Breakfast on your Sound Alternative.
I need to report a crime.
And this was cash?
Yes, ma'am.
Perfect. Can you distract us with...
Big guy must weigh 250.
We're going to hold on to this money.
I didn't get his badge number, but his last name's Marston.
You're going to need to leave.
Main suspect number two.
Hey, Mike! I'm posting bail. You stay low, all right?
You can fight for the money, but that'll take you most of a year and cost you twice what you're owed.
And it's legal?
It's law.
May I at least see my cousin?
You can threat off.
I would love to, sir, just as soon as I get my money back.
You do not stand in my station in front of my officers and set terms. You need to be very, very careful.
Let's not do that.
Chief!
I'm Becky. It's Sooks this morning. Cycles, the name of that one there. Look, a bit of catharsis, maybe a bit of anger. We're going to get into something that's a little bit thrilling. That's my link this morning. That's what we're working with. We're getting into our second film. We've been talking a little bit about The Substance. But Tristan, talk to me a little bit about Rebel Ridge.
Rebel Ridge. Well, Rebel Ridge has been out for a couple of weeks, but it was a film that me and Simon were keen to talk about at some stage. So shout out to Simon. He's on special assignment. I think he's undergoing the substance procedure as we speak, maybe.
No,
this is a joke. I mean, but, you know, it's a seven-day situation. Anyway, back to the point. Rebel Ridge is a new Netflix original movie. So it's streaming on Netflix. The reason why I was interested in it is it's directed by Jeremy Solner, who made a really good neo-noir film, Blue Ruin. But the film that I love of his is Green Room, which was a really... Every time I watch it, I forget about how violent it is, speaking of, like, violence. But that's a great thriller, a siege thriller with Anton Yelchin, Imogen Poots, Patrick Stewart, all about a punk band who gets stuck in the green room of a bar when they witness a murder in a gig that is run by neo-Nazis. It's quite a movie. I mean, Laura, have you seen Green Room?
Yeah, and Green Room is a movie that when I first saw it, I thought, yeah, that was pretty good. And then every time I've watched it since, I've found more to love about it, and now it's one of the that's definitely my favorite of his.
Yeah, it's if you haven't seen it and you have the appetite for it, but he followed that up with another Netflix film called Hold the Dark, which was okay. It had a good Jeffrey Wright performance, but it wasn't as good as his other films. So I was keen to see if with this new film, he'd bring the magic back, or it'll be a return to form. And it's basically it had also undergone a lot of production issues. It was originally meant to shoot and got delayed due to COVID production shutdown. The original star who was supposed to be in this, John Boyega, who people would know from Attack the Block and Star Wars, he left during production, and they had to scramble and find a new actor to fill the part. And that they have turned to an actor that I wasn't that familiar with, Aaron Pierre, who is best known for playing the rapper Midsize Sedan in the film Old, the M. Night Shyamalan film about the beach that makes you old. But he is not someone that I'm that familiar with. He's a British actor, but here he's playing someone a little bit from the south. He's basically playing a former Marine who cycles into town of Shelby Springs in Alabama. He has a large sum of money, $36,000, that he is intending to use to provide bail for his cousin, Mike, who has been arrested on a felony drug charge and is in a kind of holding cell, but it's very important that he doesn't go to prison because of a background situation. So Aaron Pierre's character, whose name is Terry, has the money and is just wanting to help him out, bail him out, and get him out of that situation. He is pulled over while cycling and put into a kind of situation by two officers of the town who are played by Emroy Cohen and David Denman, Roy from The Office. Basically, they find the money. They assume that he has some... that he might be engaged in drug. But it seems that it's also a bit of a shakedown. These are people who are using the letter of the law to kind of confiscate material, keep it in holding, and really put this character in a situation where he is stuck. He's only got a certain amount of days to get this money into the kind of the courthouse to bail his cousin out. So we start to see this process escalate where he's trying his best and he's very kind of like respectful and he's doing... his best to kind of navigate the situation, but he is also kind of boxed in. And there's an undercurrent of racial tension. He is a black man with kind of talking to a force of cops who are mainly white. And they are led by a very slimy Don Johnson, who's the head of the kind of the force. And there seems to be this situation of that this is a little bit of a kind of a scam or a hustle that they do in order to get money for their branch. There's a lot more that happens in this film, which kind of... it's a film of two halves. It's both a kind of revenge thriller. It's also an investigation procedural. There's a courthouse clerk named Summer, played by Anna Sophia Robb, who assists Aaron Pierre, is the only character who helps him out in this whole thing. But this is a film that I found to be very satisfying and enjoyable. It's a very airport novel kind of experience. It's like a Jack Reacher type of novel, but really done well in that you're watching this one man get kind of cornered and underestimated by a police force and then watching him strike back as the best he can. So I really enjoyed this thriller. It was very satisfying. And there are a lot of moments where I was kind of like cheering or just like great lines or great moments where it's a little bit like First Blood, the Rambo kind of situation where he's one man, they pick the wrong man, that kind of whole thing. But Laura, you've also seen this film. What did you think of Rebel Ridge?
Yeah, I liked it. I didn't know that about the background of swapping out John Boyega. That's really interesting because I couldn't imagine anyone else in that role. That Aaron Pierre was really great. It reminded me a little, not just because of Don Johnson being the villain, it reminded me a little of Brawl in Cell Block 99, minus the bone-crushing violence, which I probably would have wanted a bit more of, just for my personal tastes.
Yes.
But, yeah, I think this was, like, a very satisfying, as you said, kind of Liam Neeson could never, is what my one-line Letterboxd review of it was.
Yeah, like...
Yeah, it's very engaging.
Like, it feels like an intentional move to not repeat what he did with Green Room, and that a lot of the action seems to be this character disarming people. Like, he takes the weapons, he takes the ammo out, and then just, like, he's expert in close-quarters combat. So it's an interesting move to not go for the full, you know, ugly violence, as you say. But Aaron Pierre, I think it's a star-making performance. I can't think of John Boyega in this role. He is so, like, commanding. He's so kind of charming and so serious but sly at the same time. So I think, I hope from the back of this film, he gets a lot more exposure and a lot more roles because he's really winning in this lead role. Now, Pam, I don't know, like, I know that you're not a fan of horror films, but this is definitely... I think I've read another description, like, this is, like, for woke dads or something like this. This is, like, a definitely... Liam Neeson is a good comparison as well. This is a kind of, like... It's almost like a dad movie in a way.
Look, my dad loves a little bit of Taken. Yeah. I don't know if that's a misquote, but I feel like he does. I feel like dads have watched those movies. I like Anna Sophia Robb. I mean, yes. My references for her are Bridge to Terabithia.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the Chronicles of... was it the...
The Carrie Diaries. Yes. I was also... Yeah, took the words right out of my mouth. and I love her, and love her in that disgusting Charlie and the Chocolate Factory with Johnny Depp in it. Awful and honestly haunting movie. She's in it as whatever the posh girl is. The
Violet Beauregard?
Yeah, Veruca Salt. That's it. That's
my
it.
My icon.
Yeah, Veruca Salt. Yeah, anyway, so that's my references for her. Haven't seen Soul Surfer. We'll never watch it. She's also in that. It's a Shark Attack movie. So, look, I have references for her. And also I saw in the cast list Emery Cohen.
Yes.
Who I know from Brooklyn. Played the love interest of Saoirse Ronan's character in Brooklyn. And so there's an interest factor there. I love Roy from The Office being in this. I didn't recognise him, but he's insufferable in The Office, so I'm sure that he's just that way in this. I love an action flick. I don't mind a little bit of, yeah, a little bit of arguing. I don't mind a little bit of violence, not gratuitous violence, which I'd say the level of gratuitous violence in The Bike Riders was maybe too much just, like, you know, unnecessary violence for me, but I'm interested in this movie.
Yeah, Emory Cohen was also in The Bike Riders, and he seems to be in a stage in his career where he's like, I'm being the heavy supporting guy rather than the romantic lead in Brooklyn. But he plays probably the most, like, hateful cop in this film. But, so, look, it's on Netflix now. I wish I would have seen this in a cinema, like in the experience that we had seeing it in the cinema for The Substance. It would have been great to hear maybe some of those vocal cheers for the great hero moments in the film. But you can just watch it at home. And I just think it's a really solid... It's a little bit long. The ending kind of ties things up in a way that some people have, discussions about. But overall, I thought it was very solid. Really enjoyed it. And,
I feel like there's something for everyone in this morning's episode. There's prawns, there's hate for Dennis Quaid, we don't love Harveys, but there's some recovery going on. If you like a little bit of violence and romance, the lead turned supporting actor, go nuts. If you want to check in with the Movie Squad podcast, you can do so wherever you get your regular podcast. But for catching us up on what's going on in movie world, Tristan and Laura, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it. Another great chat on air, talking about two movies that we've both seen. And it's always fun when both people have seen the films and we get to kind of add comments. And definitely it feels like with The Substance, there's a lot more to say. But it's also a film that you don't want to spoil too much because I feel like it's just in the experience of the movie and definitely seeing it in a cinema with the kind of the soundtrack. We didn't even talk about the score, but it's so sometimes I think it also made me think of
that Eric Prydz of music video Call on Me.
Totally.
Just the aerobic stuff, and it's so like so many close ups, so like 80s and so kind of full on. But
do they do aerobics now? Like as a thing that is offered to people? Because I would be kind of interested.
Yeah, it's like I remember Sally talking to me about the film as we were kind of watching it, like when is it set? And it's kind of, it's sort of like a little bit of a weird mishmash in that obviously there's like technology where you look at it and go, okay, well it's in the here and now. But like the vibe of the show that they're doing feels like very 80s.
It reminded me of It Follows in that sense where it's kind of set outside of real time. and I think what helped kind of build that feel was that they shot a lot of the Hollywood scenes in France, so they clearly don't look exactly like what you'd think it would look like. And it's quite dingy, but it really adds to kind of the contrast between Elizabeth's beautiful apartment and then the surrounds outside of it. I loved the way it felt and the kind of surrealism.
And then the costuming as well. Demi Moore's character wears this like yellow coat that really comes into play later on in the film. But there's so much to say as well, and all the kind of the moments and the fact as well that it's very kind of grisly and gross, but you know it's also quite funny. And there are moments where like Demi Moore gets to show like the tragic side and then the funny side. And even like I thought of like Death Becomes Her and the kind of like. Just that sort of the sense of the war between the two selves.
And just like getting wrapped up in other people's opinions of you and letting it eat at you, essentially. Even if it's not real, even if it's just perceived.
Yes.
Your perceived, what other people think of you. It's obviously very The Fly, but not because when I watched The Fly recently and I just found it really upsetting and sad.
Yes.
And I hadn't felt that when I first saw it, but I think I was a kid when I first saw The Fly. But it definitely has that kind of same feel where you're just watching a person self-destruct for different, very different reasons.
So, there's a lot in it, but it's definitely one to explore and to check out. But while, we're talking on the podcast, Laura, always a fan, you know, of you being on the show and talk about the film, but also a fan of reading what you write on the website that you are part of, Film Fam. So, and particularly for a difference of opinion to the film that we reviewed last week, Speak No Evil, definitely checked out the Film Fam review of Speak No Evil to hear Laura's opinion. But yeah, definitely check out Film Fam. But what other is there anything else recently that you've watched that you were
I am a fan kind of logging them all because I'm trying to get my Letterboxd stats up for this year. So we spoke a little bit before that I had seen Twister for the first time, which a lot of my friends and closest people to me were like, what? And they felt personally offended that I hadn't seen Twister yet, which I liked. I love Helen Hunt and I love Bill Paxton. And so then after that, I watched Twisters, which I did not like at all, other than Glenn Powell. And I kind of expected to like it, but it just really didn't. It rubbed me the wrong way little bit. I also saw A League of Their Own for the first time.
Yes.
And I was, surprised by how moved I was. Gina Davis is always someone that I'm happy to watch. I just think she's wonderful. I also was shocked that Madonna was in it and how good she looks with brown hair. She should have done that her whole life.
Yeah, it's quite a movie. Obviously, it feels like an American classic at this stage, but it's such a, like, it feels like the type of film that you don't often get, which is that you know, that it's about a subject matter, it's about history, but it's very funny. It's got all these kind of great actors and performances, and the cast is just stacked. I remember growing up watching that film a lot and really loving it.
It was such a different role for Tom Hanks as well. He's so grotty in it, but I thought he was really great in it. One of the other things I saw recently was Tape.
Ah, yes.
From 2001. That's Richard Linklater, isn't it?
Yeah, that's one that goes really under the radar. Like, Richard Linklater's made a lot of films, but some of them are more kind of celebrated and remembered, like Dazed and Confused and the Before Sunrise trilogy. But Tape, what did you think of that?
I found it really intriguing. I found my allegiances switching halfway through, and I think that's the intention of it.
And it was, yeah, it's very kind of lo-fi the way it's filmed. But, yeah, the performances, Ethan Hawke, Robert Sean Leonard, and obviously Uma Thurman, when she comes in and kind of, like, flips everything, I was a big fan of that. The other one I'd probably want to talk about is Master Gardener. I finally saw Master
Gardener, we have reviewed on Movie Squad, but this is the Paul Schrader film.
Yeah, I haven't seen Card Counter yet, so I'm hoping to get to that. This did not go where I thought it was going to go at all. I'm still kind of trying to decide whether I liked it or not.
Yeah.
I thought Joel Edgerton was great, and I was definitely super interested the entire time. Mm. It was just, it's not surprising for a Paul Schrader film to be strange. So he definitely delivered with that. I do remember loving First Reformed, though.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's definitely not up there in his recent stuff as far as that is. But yeah, I'd like to see Card Counter next to weigh them all up.
Yeah, they definitely, I mean, obviously they speak to a lot of themes in his work and repeated tropes, the kind of the man in the room, the journal writing. It all goes, you know, from Taxi Driver to American Gigolo to, but yeah, I think, you know, First Reform definitely is the strongest in that it kind of really speaks to that, the apocalyptic feeling of kind of climate terror. And then it's interesting how he kind of modifies the sort of the whole thing with those two films, Card Counter and Master Gardener, and that it felt like at the time he was making Master Gardener, he was kind of going, well, this is more about love than it is about what he's usually known for, which is violence, even though it does have these moments where you get to see kind of the violence. But yeah, it's a very curious film and definitely one that would be very you know, could be very debated and picked apart with where it goes, but definitely it's, you can't deny Joel Edgerton's really just really great in the lead role.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else? What else did I see? Oh, I finally finished Waiting for Guffman. I've started that film about 10 years ago.
Oh wow!
I think, and always got to a certain point. Yeah, but I finally, I got like a triple feature on DVD. Do you remember those where you'd have like three? I think I got it from an op shop or something. And it had Best in Show, Waiting for Guffman, and A Mighty Wind.
Oh, yes.
I haven't seen Mighty Wind, but I love Best in Show. Yeah. What was my review for Waiting for Guffman? Corky St. Clair's lifestyle is funded by residuals from Chris Lilley, which I stand by.
Yeah, well, it's those are all films directed by Christopher Guest and starring Christopher Guest. And this is a nice, you know, unintended, because this ties into the upcoming Trash Classics film that we're screening at the end of September, which is This is Spinal Tap, which is, I guess, the first of the, like, mockumentary comedies and one that Christopher Guest was a star and co-wrote. But in preparation for that, I recently rewatched Best in Show and really appreciated it all over. I think I'd always liked it, but I was like, this is, it's so funny. And then, you know, it's such a great cast. And even people now who are a bit more kind of celebrated, you know, seeing them in the stage of, and it's, there's such a, like, a sweetness about it. And some of this, his films, they don't sometimes have that sweetness. Like, some of them kind of be a bit more harsh, like, For Your Consideration, the one about movie star starring Catherine O'Hara is a little bit more cynical, a little bit, could be a good double feature with The Substance. But yeah, I do have to catch up again with Waiting for Guffman and to see that, because that was the one that I guess he came back to making mockumentaries, and that was the first one that preceded, like, Best in Show, Mighty Wind. And then there was one that he did for Netflix called Mascots, which is not very good.
Yeah, I didn't. I haven't seen it, but I just got maybe bad vibes from
it. Yes.
And I thought maybe I won't touch that. I'll just leave it.
But as you say, like, it feels like the style that he, you know, helped shape with those films is definitely, like, from The Office to Chris Lee's shows, absolutely. Like, it's all, you know, there.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anything I'm looking forward to also. I saw the trailer for, is it Night Bitch? With Amy Adams?
Yes.
So when I heard about that, I was really excited, but the trailer has me a little, I don't know.
I've heard very mixed responses. I'm very keen. I have, like, my partner Sally has read the book that it was originally based on, and I think she was kind of like, the tone of the trailer was a bit surprising to what she got from the book.
Mm-hmm.
I'm keen because, you know, yeah, I really like Amy Adams, but I'm also a fan of director Emily Heller because she made The Diary of a Teenage Girl, which I think is fantastic, and also Can You Ever Forgive Me, which I think is really good. So, yeah, I think I'll see it, but, yeah, maybe it's a, hopefully it's a case of the trailer. They just don't know how to market it.
Well,
yeah.
I've heard a lot of people be like, I don't know how this book's going to be adapted. It's unadaptable. But they said that a lot about books before, so... And maybe that's correct, but I would be interested.
Yeah.
It just threw me a little bit.
So, yeah, you could check out the trailer or you could earmark it. Night Bitch, which is a film about, well, it's a story about a harried housewife or mother who feels like she's becoming a dog. So it's a very, you know, strange idea for a movie and maybe, yeah, one that Caroline Faget could have taken a stab at.
Yeah.
But hopefully she's making another. The next film after The Substance will be even better. But, you know, it's been so fun hearing what you've been watching recently, Laura, and to have you on the show again to discuss two good films and I would say one really great one, which is The Substance. But, yeah, thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
And thank you all for listening, and we'll catch you on the next episode of the Movie Squad podcast.